We are going to be continuing tonight in our series on 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14. You remember in chapter 12, it talked about the different spiritual gifts that were given to different people, and not everybody would have the same gift. And then chapter 13 was, this isn't really what you need more of. You've already got that. What you need more of is love, because it doesn't matter how much you have of this if you don't have this. And then he gets to describing love. And so this is the section we're in. Let's sing this part with the tune that Stephen and JD put together with this. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 6. We'll just sing this part of it. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Last week, we looked at love is patient. Tonight, we're going to look at love is kind and love does not envy. I want to make one point as we start going through here, and this is good for me to be looking at. I'm sure it's good for many of you to be looking at. But I want you to notice something here, that a lot of this interrelates. Some of these are positive things, like love is kind. Some of these are negative things. Love does not envy. As we go through this list, be thinking about different relationships that you have. It may be relationships at work. It may be relationships with a neighbor. It may be relationships among brethren. It may be a relationship with your spouse. It may be a relationship with your siblings. It may be a relationship with your in-laws. In areas where you have difficulty, if we have some of the negative things in here in the way, it interferes with the growth of the other. For example, if you want to put a garden in your yard, if you've poured a lot of chemicals on that spot of ground, you know, how much sunshine it gets and how much good seed you put in there may not make a lot of difference because of the negativeness that's in there. So, like, if you are envious of a person, is that going to interfere with your kindness? If you are irritable, is that going to interfere with your being patient? So as we go through these, and sometimes it's some of these negative ones that'll help to get those rooted out and the other things grow better. But we'll take them one at a time as we go through. And so tonight, the first one we're looking at is love is kind. Kind. We did before the different translations of patient, long-suffering, suffers long, patient. This was pretty consistent. No matter what translation you've got, it says kind. So pretty simple. Love is kind. The Greek word talks about in Strong's to show oneself useful, benevolently, be kind, to show oneself mild, to be kind, use kindness. And here's some other passages about kindness. Ephesians 4:32. Be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. Luke 6. Love your enemies and do good, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful. Is it easy to be kind to grateful people? The people that say, oh, that is so kind of you. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. It's pretty easy to be kind to those people. What does this call us to do? Kind to the ungrateful. Proverbs 11, verse 17 points out, a man who is kind benefits himself. Now, should that be the primary purpose of us being kind? Let me see, how can I get an advantage today? I know, I'll be kind. You can become a flatterer that way or some different things. But as in so many other things, when we do what we're, when we will be unselfish and do what we're supposed to do, the irony is, guess who often's benefiting the most? Yes. So this fits the paradox that Jesus says over and over and over. You know, if you love your life, you're going to lose it. But if you will give it up, you'll gain it. If you exalt yourself, you're going to be humbled. But if you humble yourself, you will be exalted. And of course, the words of Jesus that Paul quotes in Acts 20, it is better to give than receive. It benefits us when we're kind. Don't just do it to get some selfish advantage, but it's the way life works. When we do good, we're doing good for other people, but that, whether they're grateful or not, who's it good for? All right, Colossians 3. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, patience. I want you to just think for a minute about maybe little acts of kindness that have made a difference in your life. Sometimes it's big things. There have been people who went way above and beyond to do incredible kindness things for us that we didn't deserve. And sometimes that's made just dramatic impacts on people's lives. Completely, you know, pulled them out of a wrong direction, saved them from disaster and various things because somebody was kind. Like the Good Samaritan. The guy that was left on the road half dead. If he had not had someone come along and tend to him, what would you suppose the ratio of half dead would have turned into? Mostly dead and then eventually all dead. Princess Bride reference. But for those of y'all who don't know the movie. But that made a huge difference there. But you know what else makes a difference sometimes? Just little things. So I was thinking about when I was a kid. I remember a couple of my school teachers. My second grade teacher, Mrs. Spangenberg, and my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Rivas. So Mrs. Spangenberg, I deserved this. You know, but she took me and another boy and she taped our mouths shut with duct tape, you know. And, you know, if that happened today, it'd be in the news, you know. This teacher was suspended for taping children's mouths shut in 1966. Nobody was suspended. If I'd gone home complaining about it, my parents would have probably duct taped my face again. So I had that coming. But then in fourth grade, Mrs. Rivas, I remember, it brought tears to my eyes. You know what she did? She made little cards for us at the end of the year. All it was just little index cards. And complimented us or praised us for something that she appreciated about us in class and put like a taped a dime on it. And at the end of the year, and she was a sweet teacher and she was kind. And at the end of the year, you know, she was bidding us farewell and she handed out these little index cards. I mean, it so touched me. I sat down in the car and I cried. You know, I think one was about, you know, that I was a good speller and the other was about me being honest. And she'd take a little dime there. Now, how much time did that take her? But to this little guy in fourth grade, instead of getting his face taped shut that he deserved, you know, this time, you know, a teacher just went out of her way to do something kind. And you know what? You don't know sometimes how much something encourages a little person or a big person. And so sometimes a little act of kindness that you do is really, really more powerful and beneficial than you'll ever imagine. If you think back of some of the people that have done kindnesses for you that touched you, it can help us realize that it can make a difference. Now, if you try to be kind and somebody doesn't even care, they'll say, well, I'm not doing that. No. Look at Luke 6. Love your enemies. Do good. You'll be sons of the Most High, for he's kind to who? Even to the ungrateful. So we just need to be kind. Proverbs 31. The worthy woman, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. Teach kindness and teach it kindly. 1 Peter 3, do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you are called, that you may obtain a blessing. Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. Remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he himself said, it is more blessed to give than receive. Here's just a few memes and quotes about kindness. A little thought and a little kindness are often worth more than a great deal of money. Treat everyone with politeness, even those who are rude to you, not because they are nice, but because you are. Kindness is more than deeds. It is an attitude, an expression, a look, a touch. It is anything that lifts another person. Unexpected kindness is the most powerful, least costly, and most underrated agent of human change. And kindness is a gift everyone can afford to give. Micah 6, verse 8. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice and to love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God. So, some questions regarding kindness. Do people actively consider you to be a kind person? Not, that's, you know, if somebody says, is that a kind person, would you say that? Now, I'm going to pick on Leanna here. Leanna is a kind person. You know, if somebody said, you know, how would you describe Leanna? Wouldn't kindness be one of the things that comes to mind? She's just a kind person. Do people think of you? Do people think of me as kindness? You know, are you a kind person? If you say, well, probably most people haven't, I'm really kind, but probably most people haven't noticed it. If nobody's ever thought of you as being kind, then you've got some work to do on it. Not so that people, great, somebody thought I was kind, but just to be kind. I'm not really unkind. Does that mean I'm kind? No. It doesn't say love is neutral, love is mediocre. You know, it said love is kind. Have I appreciated it when others have been kind to me? You know what even unkind people tend to like? Kindness when it's coming their way. Well, let's send it out the other direction. How often do I show kindness to others? Do I make excuses for not being kind? And coming back to where we talked about, like, in relation to different people. In fact, let's put some things up here on the board to think about. There are, you know, so here's self, right? Okay, and you go to work. And this is a pretty loud marker, so let me start over. So here's our guy, and he goes off to work, and there's coworkers. And on the way there, there's people on the road. And if he goes and gets some lunch, there's people at lunch, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's his family. And then there's his in-laws. And then there's his neighbors. And there's his brethren, et cetera, et cetera. There's all these different people that you might be interacting with. And somewhere in there, there might be somebody that we're having trouble being kind to. Do we make excuses for not being kind? Are they good excuses? What do I need to give up to be kind? And sometimes it's some of those other things on that same list. Because if we've got envy, that'll interfere with being kind. If we've got resentment, that'll interfere with being kind. What are we called to be? Kind! So if we've got some other things in the way of that, what do we need to do? We need to work on getting rid of those. And, you know, kindness doesn't mean, well, because I'm kind to this person, so I'm a kind person. Well, what about these? Like, you know, here's two brothers driving along on the road, and they're discussing, you know, I was thinking about, you know, Isaiah, that passage in Paul today. You know, that was just really powerful. Just a second, that guy's trying to merge in. You know, it's you can talk about one thing, but then you can't be even kind to a stranger. Why? And then there's the flip side. It's easy for us to be kind to strangers and then not kind in our own family. I was talking with somebody after last Sunday about the series, and I said, what I got to work on is not being impatient or irritable within my own family. And somebody said, yeah, that's what is often the case. But we can't say, well, because I'm kind there, that doesn't. No, we need to be kind all across the board. I was having lunch with a brother one time, and he said, we were at a restaurant, and he just was not nice to the waitress. You know, he was just be kind to people, but he wasn't. He just kind of spoke kind of gruffly with her, and when she brought the order, oh, I don't want, you know, he's just kind of complaining and fussing and sending it back because he didn't want the rice, which he didn't say to begin with. You know, it was a Chinese restaurant, you know, and he's really engaged with me. He's just rude to her. And at the end, he puts down a tip of like, I don't remember if it's 25 cents or 50 cents or 75 cents. And I said, that's what you're leaving for a tip? He said, yeah, I don't leave much tip unless I'm on a date. Yeah, yeah. And so kindness doesn't mean here's somebody I'm kind to, so I'm kind. Kindness is across the board. I read to y'all an article years ago from, I think it was the New York Times, where they interviewed a lot of CEOs on a particular topic. And it was what they did to help investigate a person they were looking to give a high-paying position to. And a lot of these CEOs said the same thing. They take them out to dinner and watch how they treat the servers. Because guess how somebody that wants a really high-paying job is going to treat the person in position to give them the job? But that doesn't tell you what kind of person they are. How they treat somebody that they view as a servant below them, that says much more. Let's move on to love does not envy. So let's be kind. Let's also not envy. Love does not envy. Proverbs 14, verse 30. A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. And I meant to take that slide out because I had another one here. So here's a different translation. Proverbs 14:30 again from New King James Version. A sound heart is life to the body, but envy is rottenness to the bones. I want you to think about this. Let's look at a few examples of envy. Acts 7, verse 9, Stephen's sermon. He's going back through some Jewish history, and he's talking about Joseph and his brothers. Why does his brothers sell him into slavery? One reason, they were envious. Did Jacob play favorites? Yes, he did. Did Jacob have a favorite wife? Yes, he did. Did he have a favorite son? Yes, he did. Did he get the coat of many colors and the others didn't? Yes, they did. And we're going to tell you something. Life's not always fair. The fact that this was the case, does it justify the brothers' behavior? Sometimes envious people think they're justified because it wasn't fair. I didn't get my fair share. Life's not always going to be fair. And if you go through life expecting that everybody is going to treat you right and you're always going to get your fair share, you're going to be constantly disappointed. And you're probably going to regularly overestimate what your fair share is. By the way, what was the context for this section of 1 Corinthians? Some of the Corinthians thinking, what? I didn't get my fair share. You know, you remember his analogy of the body? The ear shouldn't be saying, because I'm not getting to be the eye, I'm not part of the body. So what are some of the Corinthians thinking? Because I didn't get that spiritual gift, I'm being left out. And he said, what? The Holy Spirit gave different gifts. To one he gave this, to one he gave that, to one as he willed. And they should have accepted that. Envious people will often overestimate what their fair share is, assume they should be getting things that you're not going to get, and making themselves miserable because of it. So here comes Joseph, who they had been behaving badly, and Joseph let their father know. They didn't like that. And he had a dream. They sure didn't like his dream. And, of course, he was the favorite. And so here he comes. Here comes that dreamer. Let's kill him. Well, they decide not to kill him, but they sell him into slavery. So the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him. And by the way, what happened to those dreams? Who ends up bowing down before them? Yeah. Philippians 1, verse 15. Paul said, some are preaching Christ from envy and rivalry, others from goodwill. Isn't that sad? Paul's in prison, and it's motivated other brethren to preach more. And there were two types. Some people preached more with a good heart. Why might you preach more from a good heart when Paul got arrested and imprisoned? Well, it might just say, you know, more work needs to be done. Paul's been arrested, but let's get out there and get busy and help keep spreading it. Or it might be seeing Paul's endurance, even in that hardship, encouraged you. Man, if he's still working while in prison, I can still, who knows all the different motivations, but it's a good heart that keeps wanting to do good. But what were some people doing? Envy. Because they were using the gospel to exalt themselves. How ugly is that? This is an interesting article, and I'm going to share quite a bit of it with you. It's by Neil Burton. It's from psychologytoday.com. He is a philosopher and psychiatrist in Oxford, England. And so this is the psychology and philosophy of envy. And he makes several biblical references in here, and there's a lot of good stuff in here. I want you to listen to a bit of it. The psychology and philosophy of envy, of the deadly sins, and this goes back to a tradition within Catholicism of seven deadly sins, of which envy is one. Of the deadly sins, only envy is no fun at all. That's kind of interesting to think about. Can you understand, for instance, that some sins bring pleasure? What does it say in Hebrews? Moses chose instead of the pleasures of sin for a season. So we can acknowledge that one problem with a lot of sins is that they bring pleasure. What pleasure does envy bring? Yeah. It's destructive, it's sinful, it's wicked, and what pleasure does it bring? It doesn't. In envy, Joseph Epstein quipped that of the deadly sins, only envy is no fun at all. Envy derives from the Latin invidia, which means non-sight. In Divine Comedy, Dante has the envious laboring under cloaks of lead, their eyelids shone shut with leaden wire. The etymology suggests that envy either arrives from or results in a form of blindness. Now, this is not talking about the Greek word in the Bible, envy, but our English word. But let's proceed. For envy to take root, three conditions must be met. I would say all you need is the first two. And the third follows. He's going to list three. You can be envious with the first two. The third will follow. But don't think, oh, I'm only doing the first two, or I'm okay. No. First, we must be confronted with a person or persons with a superior quality, achievement, or possession. Second, we must desire that quality for ourselves or wish the other person lacked it. Third, we must be pained by the associated emotion. In sum, envy is the pain caused by the desire for advantages of others. Envy is mean and miserly, arguably the most shameful of the deadly sins. Our envy is hardly ever confessed, not even to ourselves. Although the terms are often used interchangeably, envy, the English word, is not synonymous with jealousy. If envy is the pain caused by the desire for the advantages of others, jealousy is the pain caused by the fear of losing our advantages. So I don't want to lose, you're taking what's mine. Whereas envy is, ooh, I want what's yours, kind of that. Envy is especially directed at those with whom we compare ourselves. By the way, I want you to think about social media in this regard. Such as our neighbors and relatives. As Bertrand Russell said, beggars don't envy millionaires, though of course they will envy other beggars who are more successful. But I'll tell you what, you also see it. You know, you remember all the protest movements about the 1%, the 1%? There's a lot of envy in that. Now, are there some unjust business practices in the business world? Yes. Are there some unjust governments? Yes. But if you think that the reason there is poverty in the world is because some guy somewhere came up with a computer idea and became a billionaire, and that's why there's poverty in the world, before all the dot-com, you know, things and all the billionaires that have made money off of computers and systems and all that, there were poor people in the world. You know, to think the reason I don't have money is because somewhere somebody in the world has a bunch of it. A lot of this has to do with envy. Our age of equality and mass media encourage us to compare ourselves to anyone and everyone, fanning the flames of our envy. And by emphasizing the material and tangible over the spiritual and invisible. Our culture of empiricism and consumerism has removed the one countervailing force capable of smothering those flames. And you know what? There are people whose presence on social media is they think their Facebook friends are their actual friends. You know, and if somebody unfriends them, they are upset. There was a case in Tennessee where a man went and shot somebody because they unfriended his daughter. Man, if you're up, you know, find something more worthy to get upset about than whether or not you got unfriended on Facebook. But there are people who will put fake images of themselves up to make other people think their lives are more perfect than they are, or that they're on vacation somewhere that they're not, and all sorts of other things. And then there are people that will look at those posts and say, oh, they've got it better than me. And that's a lot of nonsense going on. Envy costs us friends and allies, and more generally, tempers, restrains, and undermines even our closest relationships. In some cases, it can even lead to acts of sabotage with a child who breaks the toy he knows he cannot have. Over time, our anguish and bitterness can lead to physical health problems. Remember, this is from Psychology Today. Infections, cardiovascular diseases, and cancers. Mental health problems such as depression, anxiety, insomnia. We are quite literally consumed by envy. You remember what Proverbs said? Envy is rottenness to the bones. Now, that's not limited to our physical health. It will just corrupt you. But it can do that also to your physical health. Though carefully disguised, envy is often betrayed through indirect expressions. Schadenfreude, I've forgotten how you pronounce it, which literally means harm joy in German, some of you know this term, can be defined as pleasure at the misfortunes of others. Schadenfreude helps sell the news, which is riddled with stories of disgraced politicians and fallen celebrities. Have you noticed how much our culture is interested and invested in the lives of celebrities? And we want to be like them. You know, if here's a new star, you know, the girls are all getting their hair done like her. You know, the guys are all wanting to be like this guy and stuff. But then give a few years, and instead of them being on the front of all the magazines because everybody's wanting to be like them, then what's the big news? Then everybody loves to read about their fall and their disaster and their, you know, they got fired or they got divorced or, you know, or whatever, or disgraced in some other way. Whatever we call it, the Hebrew book of Proverbs explicitly warns against it. Rejoice not when your enemy falls, and let not your heart be glad when he stumbleth, lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his wrath from him. The fundamental problem with envy is that it blinds us to the bigger picture, as with Cain and Abel. And you remember Cain? What's his problem? The Lord is pleased with his brother. And so, you remember Cain's face? Why is your countenance fallen? Genesis chapter 4. Do well and it will be lifted up. How simple would that have been? Just do the right thing, Cain. But if you do not, sin couches at the door and it will master you. You need to master it or it's going to master you. By holding us back, envy makes us even more apt to envy, opening up a vicious spiral of envy. So think about that. First off, consider this. Are there people that have things that you would be happy if you also had? That's not a sin. Are there people that have health in an area that you don't have? For many of you, there's an area like that. Would you be happy if Franz is laying in a hospital bed? He was able to get into a recliner this week out of the bed. That's a big step. But he's a long way from where he was. Would Franz like to be able to walk in here? Yes. He would like to be able to do that. Can he do that right now? No, he can't. Is there anything wrong with Franz hoping and desiring to have the health that you have right now? Of course not. That's not what envy is about. But there are always going to be people that have something you don't have, whether it be health or wealth or youth or a relationship or something else or a natural gift or something. There's going to be people that have something you don't have. And if you are not happy, if that is the case, you have guaranteed that you will be a miserable person. Because every single person in this room, there's all sorts of blessings we've all been given. And there's a ton of people who would love to have many of the blessings that you've got. One of the problems with envy is that instead of appreciating what we do have, that somebody else might be envious over, we're not grateful for what we do have, and we're envious because there's something else we don't have. What will that do to a person? If I get consumed by envy, they've got this and I want that, I don't have that, and now I'm going to get envious and envious, what is the likelihood that that's going to make things better for me? Not very likely. Instead, it's going to take me in a downward spiral, which means I will have less of the things that I want. So it's self-defeating, and it's sinful. So a vicious spiral of envy. And so with our eyelids sewn ever more tightly, we lumber through under this cloak of lead. The politics of envy end in communism, which aims at creating a society that is free from envy. In practice, it doesn't work. I remember this. It was one of the things that really stood out to me. When the Berlin Wall was opened up and East Europe was opened up, my family and I moved, as a number of you know, to East Europe, and we helped plant the work in Czechoslovakia and Prague. And so we were moving to a place that had just been under communism. And it was very interesting getting to know the Czech people. There were qualities they had as a nation and faults they had as a nation. Now, not everybody had the same one, but kind of like in the Bible, it says Cretans are always liars and evil gluttons. It was one of the Cretans that noticed that. The Czechs in general were a rather passive people. They were not aggressive. They were passive. For instance, if you recall World War II, when Hitler attacked Poland, Poland fought back and he smashed it. One of the reasons Prague is a beautiful city is because Hitler came in, Czechs just kind of let him come in. But there were two qualities that stood out as very negative traits. A lot of Czechs were jealous, envious, and suspicious. And a lot of that had to do with communism. Suspicious because there was a saying in communism, if you have four friends, one of them is secret police and you don't know which one it is. So the government had its way of spying on everybody, and so you were suspicious. So we had members in the church, and she's sure that he's secret police, you know, and this type of thing. And the other was jealous. They were jealous. And like one of the Czechs told me one time, we were trained to resent it when people had something we didn't have. So let's go back to what communism did. Kind of like the 1% protests and everything. Communism said, those rich people, those factory owners, those landowners, they've got it all. We want it. Yes. Let's give it to the people. So you had the People's Republic of East Germany and stuff. They didn't give it really to the people. It belonged to the government. And you got a little bit. And so some other sayings they had was, we pretend to work and they pretend to pay us. And so everybody had a little bit. And they were jealous. So one of my favorite jokes from back then was a joke about a Russian. It went like this. A genie, and some of you have heard this, but it illustrates the point well. A genie offers a wish, free wish, to an Englishman, a Frenchman, and a Russian. Englishman, what do you want? And he said, I would like a country manor. Boom, you got it. Frenchman, what do you want? I would like a chateau and a vineyard. Boom, you got it. Russian, what do you want? My neighbor has a goat, and I don't. Kill the goat. And that was kind of the thing going on there. And it's a good illustration of what envy does. Let's finish up here. Envy is also a question of attitude. Whenever we come across someone who is better or more successful than we are, we can react with indifference. And there are people like that. I don't care. I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't care about you. Joy. What does Romans 12 say? Rejoice with those that rejoice. Weep with those that weep. So you wanted a promotion at work? I didn't get my promotion. He got a promotion? No! Be glad for him. If you had gotten your promotion, what would you like your brother to be? Happy for you. So you know what? Be happy for him. Yeah, but I didn't get it. So what? Someday something good is going to happen for you that you don't want everybody envying for. Should every day be all about you or me? This is his day. He got the promotion. Be glad for him. Admiration. Wow, he did a good job on that. Envy or emulation. Sometimes we can attain what other people have. Sometimes it's not going to happen. But sometimes we can look at what other people have and think, wow, that is really great. I'd like to have that too. And you work to get it. Not because you resent it. And let me tell you, that was... some of you probably read the book my dad wrote about Mom. And that was one of the things that just really stood out about her life. From a little girl, she admired good things. And when she would see good things, she would think, I'd like to be like that. I'd like to be able to do that. I'd like to learn that. And she accomplished so many things and got good at so many things partly because that was how the way she approached life. But let me tell you, nobody gets everything that they want. And when at a quite young age and in otherwise impeccable health, she found out she had stage 4 colon cancer, she would have liked to have had the health that a lot of other people did. But she didn't. But you didn't see envy. You didn't see bitterness. And we would go down there, and I remember coming back one time, I think it was April and I were talking about, we said, we go down there to make her feel better. And we go down there and she makes us feel better. Love does not envy. Love is kind. Love is patient and kind. It does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing. It rejoices with the truth. Let's be loving. Let's stand and sing the song selected.